Welcome to East Meets West, episode 85. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger C.
Roger C.
Yes.
In the house.
Yes, just like it is on Pounce.
In my house.
Oh, if anyone's on Pounce, I kind of made everyone just a fan because I've been getting so many requests that if I added everyone on the planet.
I add everyone.
Oh, well. Do you?
Yeah, I do.
The thing is...
I don't on Twitter, but I do on
Pounce. It's like 125 some odd, you know, things that I put them on, I'd be, you know... Not to say I wouldn't want to read it, but I don't use Pounce.
Well, it does change the way I use Pounce, because I have 579 friends, and I'm about to have 582. Okay, Ash Laws, you're in. Barry Sands right. Chagrin, you're my friend. Jake Jarvis, no problem.
All right, fine. Okay, since
but you know what? I'm doing it as an experiment, because I am using Pounce in a way differently than Twitter, because Pounce allows you to kind of send messages to groups. You can create the groups, mm-hmm. like my peeps group and my work group and my family group.
I mean, it's kind of weird. There's so many of these style social networking things. Isn't there? What was that really ornery, that really kind of officious one? What was that one that Jim Lauterbach was complaining about? The one that I got just a couple of invites to.
Not that, Jaiku.
No, the most recent one.
Oh, yeah. Prager invited me to that one.
Yeah, and it was really irritating. It was called Squish Crush.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that.
Queech.
No, Queesh. Queesh. I think it's Queesh. I don't want to get into the dirty word there.
But somebody was saying it was a big spammer, right?
Yeah, basically what it does is, and I didn't do this when I signed up for it because I actually signed myself out of it. But when you sign up, it asks you, do you have a Gmail account? And
yeah,
if you type
in
your Gmail address, it will say, oh, see, who else is on?
Which is not that unusual.
No, Ketchup. That's what it's called, Ketchup.
Ketchup. Right? Yeah.
What's
with a Q.
Yeah,
right.
It's supposed to be Ketchup.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it goes through and pulls out your entire like mailing list and spams all of them to use Ketchup.
Although that's not unusual. You can do that in Gmail to add your you can like pull in your Yahoo address book and add the mail to uh-huh. Yahoo. You can in Facebook you can pull in your Gmail stuff.
I know, but does the site automatically spam them with invites that you never sent?
No, I mean, it says would you like to send invites to all these people, and you say yes. And what you're saying is Ketchup doesn't ask you if you want to send invites.
It just was sending stuff out to them. Well, according to
not good.
Not to me. I haven't because I didn't put my Gmail because I don't ever like cross-pollinate any of my services because of crap like that?
I don't. I very rarely do. I can remember one time where I let something pull in my address book. It was for a pretty good reason. But
Ziff Davis?
It might have been LinkedIn, maybe. Where I was like, no, I need to find out who else is, you know, it's more of a serious business type thing. And then I was very choosy about who. I didn't just send it to everybody in my address book.
I think it's Ketchup. Ketchup.
Ketchup with a Q. Yeah, I think
it's
something like that.
I think it's Ketchup. I think it's just trendy spelling for words. I think they should have spelled it C-A-T-S. Cats.
They probably couldn't get that URL.
I've never understood that. Didn't we go over this one time before, the difference between catsup and ketchup?
We did.
And I don't remember.
It might have even been on the podcast. I know we've talked about it.
And it was even more amazing because it kind of delved into the whole Heinz 52. Dwelled? Didn't we? We went into the whole...
You mean delved.
Delved. I like saying delved.
That's not a word.
How do you know?
Dwelved?
Why is it not a word? Is it not languages? Remember, we also got into
living
this
language.
As well?
It's a living language.
Isn't that where we get all our, you know, different enunciations for certain words?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So you're going to spell it D-E-L-V-E. You're just going to be like
exactly.
French.
Why not?
Ketchup, and later as ketchup. The following list is early quotations from the OED. Most popular theory of the word's origin is that it derives from one of two words from the Fujian region of coastal southern China. Koi chiap in the Xiamen accent, which I'm totally butchering all of this, I'm sure, but kei chiap in the Zhangzhou accent. Both of these words come from the Amoy dialect of China, where it meant the brine of pickled fish or shellfish.
Which is what ketchup really is.
Some people prefer the Malayan word ketchup, spelled K-A-T-J-A-P by the Dutch, which may have come from the Chinese in the first place. The Malay word means taste.
Oh, you know what else came from the Chinese was the kiwi fruit.
What's that?
The kiwi fruit.
What about it?
It's Chinese gooseberries.
Oh.
And they found it was descended from uh-huh. Chinese gooseberries.
Like it's a mutation or a line.
Yes,
off of that.
It's a line. I don't think. Well, yeah, technically it is a mutation as well.
You know, we're essentially. I mean, sometimes East Meets West is just a podcast delving or dwelling into Wikipedia.
I want people to start using dwelling, like dwelling, dwelling.
Like dwelling or like delving?
Both. No, I want them to use it in the same enunciation as you would. It's dwelling.
Dwell is already a word, unfortunately. No. It's the experience of simultaneously deep delving and ground dwelling.
Huh?
This eclectic weblog is geared for those who creatively dwell at the edge of life and business.
See? That works.
So it's like convergent evolution.
Uh-huh. Because
I think they're kind of going for what you were sort of saying you
exactly.
wanted to use it as. Oh, boy. Urban Dictionary, by the way.
So
that's not the OED.
So,
it's urbandictionary.com that defines it.
So am I somehow vindicated by this?
No.
Oh.
Not even in the least. You and Urban Dictionary are in agreement about something.
Oh, you know, urban language is a very legitimate
Wait,
form
there's a
of
conference called Dwelve?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Ting, ting. I hear the cosmic scales tip in my mouth.
Oh, my. It's an incubating retreat.
Uh-huh. See, that's what we like to do on East Meets West, incubate ideas,
oh
concepts.
My. Anyone needing a fresh, original approach to their life, business, art, you name it, should attend Dwelve.
Uh-huh.
Entrepreneurs, marketing veeps, CEOs, small business owners,
it's
Roger Chang, advertising creative
it's
directors.
It's all Web 2.0.
Iconoclasts, filmmakers,
See?
Writers, poets, sculptors, mavericks.
Which one are you, Tom? Which one are you?
I am the stick-in-the-mud grammatical strict. Actually, I'm not, though. I totally believe in the living language thing. I just had to. It wouldn't be very interesting if I agreed with you, especially on Dwelve, because it just sounds dumb.
Whatever.
Dwelve, you hippie. Put your shoes on.
What are you talking about? My socks
Cut
are
your
perfect.
Hair.
My hair's shorter than yours. And it's not because I'm bald either, because I have a nice, thick layer.
Dwelve.
Fine. Delve.
Social networking, dwelving.
What's wrong with, but going back to the whole social, I think there's a limit to all these just because after a while, I think people are just kind of like, how many other sites do I have to visit in order to meet up with my friends or communicate? I mean, is it like bar hopping where you go from, hey, let everyone go to this bar, and we're done with this one, let's go to the next one. Oh.
Yeah, it's interesting. Trying to get people on Facebook, a lot of people are like, no, I've got MySpace. I don't want to do Facebook.
I have both.
Because of that.
Well, it's interesting. You know Dana Boyd? She's this woman that wrote about the class, race, and kind of social segregation that you see in the groups that use Facebook versus MySpace.
Yeah, I remember seeing that story.
So, I mean, it's just, I don't actually agree with a lot of what she says, but I think it's very interesting that that's how she kind of sees it because her whole argument is Facebook is more for the upwardly mobile.
I would take a bit of issue with the way you stated that.
What?
And she took a lot of issue with the way it was reported. Her whole point was not that Facebook was for anyone.
No.
Her whole point was that the people using Facebook currently were. And I think that's an important difference.
Yeah,
In other words, Facebook isn't going out there saying, we're merely for the intelligent and elite.
I totally agree with you. I'm just making
a small correction there.
No, I totally agree with you. But at the same time, you know, and I mean, the other point she makes is that MySpace is the is used by those who are not as maybe technologically sophisticated uh-huh. as economically well off as white as Facebook.
She was just commenting on what the current populations were, and she got a lot of flack because people took it as if she was saying Facebook's full of a bunch of rich white people. And it's like, she's like, yeah, that's all I'm saying. It is. That's just a fact. I'm not trying to accuse Facebook of anything. But it was pretty interesting. And I think any newer social network is going to draw from a more technologically advanced, higher educated. I think MySpace was probably that at the beginning before it pulled all the people off of Friendster.
I think it's...
Because it's early adopters.
Well, the thing with MySpace was the whole thing of customizing your... Which is you couldn't do originally with Friendster.
Right.
As well as doing all the music, you know, doing the garish wallpaper. The important thing to notice is to note is I don't know how I haven't used Facebook all that much, so I don't know if there's the kind of depth and broad reach of the different groups, you know, subgroups.
Like there's tons of groups.
But in terms of kind of not open access, but just general access that people use, MySpace is it because you'll find. You know, you'll see find a MySpace for a popular TV show. You'll find a MySpace, MySpace page for any given band under the sun.
Yeah, I'm not sure how what the breadth of Facebook is, but it's pretty good.
Because
I have to say, there's a group for almost everything I can think of.
But that being said, when I did this comparison like 3-4 months ago, I did not see the kind of almost parallel where you had I'm really big into the sci-fi and the big kind of the comic books and big into the kind of weird stuff, and I didn't find as many of those on Friendster than I did, and that could purely be because there's not as many people, there's not that critical mass of people on it in order to generate.
Well, there was I can't remember exactly when, but not too long ago there was an explosion of groups on Facebook. I suddenly started to get all these requests for different groups, and I think it was around the time that they opened up the membership to anybody. They didn't require you to be part of a network. So I think that really made the groups take off because, I mean, there's some pretty crazy groups on there now. And competing versions of groups. I mean,
yeah.
I went to find an All Blacks group for All Blacks rugby.
On Friendster? Or not Friendster,
on Facebook.
Facebook.
And there were several of them. So I had to find which one was the most popular and kind of go with that just because I figured, well, I'm going to go with the one that has the most people because it'll be more interesting.
And the second thing is because MySpace has been out longer, it's managed to inherit a lot of the facets of the modern, technological consumerist society. In other words, you get a lot of spam for stuff you don't want, especially from, hey, you want to be my friend? And it's just basically a link to a hookup.
Well, it's funny. I remember before MySpace was for bands. I remember joining MySpace when it was just a new Friendster alternative. And then I remember hearing about how, you know what bands are doing? Because you can customize MySpace, bands are going onto MySpace. And then suddenly now the conventional wisdom is MySpace started for musicians. And
them. Totally.
People
I remember it before it started.
It just evolved that way.
I remember before the bands, and right after the bands, the next big thing was TV and movies. So a lot of Transformers, prime example. They had their whole Microsoft Transformers page with the music, video clips. So for many people, it was kind of a web portal for their content. And it's very interesting that they did it that way. And I'm wondering as like Facebook and all the other social networking like sites start to expand, try to attract a larger audience, are you going to see a very similar change as well?
I remember when I was doing consulting for a television network, and one of the people was like, should I make a MySpace page for our network? And I remember thinking, yeah, why not? I guess you could. And it was like right before everyone was starting to do that. And it hadn't hit me before. It was kind of amazing how everybody thought of it all at the same time.
The other example of that style of use for social networking in actually non-social networking environment is YouTube. I mean, YouTube, you can create a YouTube page.
Like your director's page.
It's essentially. And I did this for the IFC. I made an IFC page. I put all the stuff I could encode and put up before I had to go on the page. And, it's interesting because the really well-done ones are essentially a living kind of channel or a network online. I mean, they have like clips of the shows. Hey, you want to watch more? They'll give, like NBC has one. They give you all the really funny SNL clips that you see like people posting like 20 billion times on YouTube. They'll cut all of it, but they'll leave the NBC one there. And it's all merely to drive more audience back to the show. So it's kind of that weird kind of, a confluence of both traditional social interaction as well as consumerism and commercialization. Like, hey, all these people on there, why don't we just drop in a couple of ads or flyers, and then it expands out. Hey, why don't we add video and why don't we add like, oh, you want to be our friend? Who wants to be a superhero? Like one of the big inputs or outlets they have is their MySpace page. You can be their friend and you can put in your, you can find out when the next, tryouts for the next series or the next season will be. So it'd be interesting. I think Facebook is basically all whites because most of those who are technologically savvy tend to be in the upper scale of earnings, and they tend to be pretty much white.
Well, you just followed the demographic down. Yeah. It's not all white.
I mean, no.
For God's sake, it's not even close. But I know what you're saying, which is it's
well,
a higher percentage.
Well, I mean, I'm using her.
Well, she doesn't say that either, but it is a higher
percentage. No, she doesn't say it outright, but she does kind of intimate that actually is the case.
What, that it's all white? That there's absolutely no Chinese people? Like,
no,
you're not
that
on
it's
Facebook?
Not, but it's for majority.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not even, I mean, majority means 51%.
That's true.
51% isn't by any means all.
That's true. I don't.
But it is. It is
I don't
a higher
think,
percentage.
But that's
it's
the thing is, I don't
percentage.
Think she even means 50. I think she means like 75-80%.
I don't know what the percentage is, but I would imagine it's probably somewhere around 70, maybe 60.
I would actually say higher.
You think?
Yes.
I'm trying to think because I get a lot of friend requests, and I would say it's probably around 70. Just from what I've seen. Of course, that's not a scientific example.
Well, that's,
so what the hell do I know?
Well, I don't know, but she. Yeah. So I don't know.
The point's the same. Yeah. I mean, we're kind of arguing a fine point there.
Yes.
Shall we go to the comments?
Sure.
Rodrigo writes in to say, he posts, sabrilliant.com/EMW, quick info about the Brazilian-Canadian. I always played soccer, and I played rugby in the university. After that, I can play soccer like a rugby player, which means even when people tackle me and hit me hard, I can still keep going. Pretty good thing, if you ask me, specifically for indoor soccer.
Is the field shorter?
Especially. What, in indoor soccer? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's indoors. It's actually a little skinnier and a little shorter.
Well, I mean, you can make an indoor field as big as an outdoor. It's just
They like to play in arenas, though, and arenas aren't as big as stadiums.
Like arena football?
Yeah, it is. It's arena football for soccer. Except it's been around longer than arena football.
So it's arena
indoor soccer's been around since the late 70s, in the U.S. at least. It might be around longer other places.
Huh.
I used to love indoor soccer, though. It was all we had in the U.S. We didn't. After the North American Soccer League went away, all we had was the major indoor soccer league, and the St. Louis Steamers were always good. So
that sounds dirty. Next,
the Steamers. Ape Niner says the World Cup is already looking like a 4-team championship, which affirms what many already believe: NZ, Oz, and South Africa being the only worthy contenders. Although no NZer will ever write off France, giving an infamous game that we would like to believe never happened, but are all too reminded often of. Similarly, there are already fears 0-3 is repeating, as we have a center injured and a player who is primarily a fullback playing center, which happened the previous World Cup, added with an injury crisis at lock. However, it doesn't seem to be affecting them yet, because New Zealand won like 108-13.
Who are they playing against?
Portugal.
Wow.
So far, so good. Of course, they haven't really come up against like a South Africa or an Australia yet or something like that. And then if you want to know the difference between a ruck and a maul, Ape Niner posted a very good summary of it. On the blog, sobrilliant.com/EMW. Michael says, LaDainian Tomlinson of the San Diego Chargers has proven to be ineffective as a passer, having completed 7 career passes, 6 of them for touchdowns, and a career passer rating of 152.1, which may not include one on Sunday against Chicago. And he is a running back, I believe.
Oh, nice.
So, there you go. South Africa versus England is the only pool match worth anything, said Bangi, and he was right. So far, anyway, except that South Africa shut out England.
Yeah.
I mean, England are the defending World Cup champions, and they got shut out by South Africa.
Wow.
Shut out.
What was the score?
38-0. I think that's
wow,
right.
that's pretty bad.
Dave Broadback, the psychologist, says in Canadian football, if a player is lined up behind a guy that kicks, he can go get the ball and get possession, which is a holdover from rugby. Now and then you will see a player do a quick kick, and a wide receiver will line up behind him and run like hell to try and catch the punted ball. Usually this is near the end of the game. Normally a player that is not onside, behind the kicker, must give the opposing player a 5-yard sort of exclusion zone so he can catch the ball and return it. He also points out there's no such thing as a fair catch in Canadian football. In the NFL, you can call for a fair catch, which means nobody can tackle you,
until you
but you get the ball, but you don't get to advance the ball.
Yep.
There's no such thing in the CFL, so a lot of times new American players will call for a fair catch, and the Canadian, how does he put it? I swear you can actually hear the other players licking their chops when they see somebody calling for a fair catch. Because they're just going to smack the heck out of them. SoCal Jess says, Tom, I agree with you that the game of baseball is the ultimate statistical sport. However, only if you use the quantitative data used, such as runs, hits, at-bats, home runs, etc. One can go over the moon with designing various probability frameworks around baseball with the numbers alone. I don't agree that you can recreate a game of baseball solely on the same quantitative data. One cannot eliminate the qualitative attributes, such as age, performance level, height, weight, steroids, enhancements, etc. These characteristics are too vast and diverse to pinpoint the probability of recreating an actual game. There's no reliable way to create a good sampling group to test this recreation hypothesis. Oh yeah, go Dodgers, she says, not me. Dave Brodbeck responded to her and said, hey, those all seem pretty quantitative to me. Any decent inferential statistician could play with those variables with something as simple as multiple regression.
Well, I was just saying, like age and, you know, all those are quantifiable to some extent.
So that would be interesting. I wonder if any of those simulator games have taken that into account.
Well, if I don't know how long you've been playing computer games, but back like in the mid-'80s.
Probably since 1978.
Since you were alive?
not quite since I was alive.
I'd sit you, but anyways, there was a sports software company that used to put out a baseball and a NFL or MLB and NFL statistics game.
Yeah.
Where basically you would pick the teams.
Yeah.
Like you wanted, and
there's been a lot of those.
But it was actually considered one of the best because the statistical data that they put into it at the time was considered like, excuse me.
Bless you.
At the head of the time. And it's kind of funny because a lot of.
Do you remember who it was?
XOR or something like that.
I don't know.
But
Micro League Baseball was like the top baseball software, and it was out for the Commodore 64, so I had it in the mid-'80s.
I played Hardball from
Hardball was a game you played. Micro League was a simulator.
That's why I liked Hardball, because you had the little button and you had to hit
the ball. I still have Hardball, actually. I've got the floppy still sitting back in my office. But Micro League was a total simulator where you pick the players and it took the statistics and everything. And then later on, Out of the Park Baseball and Diamond Mind, as far as I know, are sort of the currently. Is that your ride?
Oh man, my pig! Someone stole. Oh wait, it's not my pig. My hog. Someone stole my hog.
Pig. That's a smaller version of a hog.
Yes, and it includes bacon.
So those are kind of the two current ones that I at least know about.
What was that one from Electronic Arts? It was who was that really famous baseball coach from the 80s?
Manager? Tommy Lasorda?
No, someone else.
Chuck Tanner?
But it was like something, you know, baseball and had his
so-and-so's.
Baseball.
They're trying to do like a John Madden sort of
thing. Well, it was kind of weird. It was a cross between Hardball and statistical, because you could have the computer.
Well, all the EA games for baseball have been like that ever since. You can either simulate, or not ever since, but lately. You can either simulate, and the simulators are pretty good, or you can play, or you can kind of do a combo of both. So, I like the statistical recreation. Torsten says, here's another topic for ArguCon, the infamous Imperial versus Metrics. The EU has decided it won't force the UK to go over to Metric and is leaving it up to the British government whether they want to continue to use the Imperial system. I didn't realize the UK still used the Imperial system for much. What do they use it for?
Distance. They still use miles.
They do?
Well, they measure their speeds in miles per hour.
Do they?
Yes.
Oh.
Because
when I was there, I thought everything was in metric.
They might do it like here where they have both.
Yeah, both.
And there's also a lot of weights in the small
Again,
shops
everything
and
I
stuff.
Saw were grams, but I guess maybe it depends on where you're going.
Well, the example they used that when I saw this was like, you know, the outdoor store, or not store, but shop, you know, where you, like a farmer's market thing, where they had everything written. At one point, there was a directive that you had to use metric, and there was a big revolt, like, ah, I gotta switch because, you know, some Frenchman tells me.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Well, what's interesting is France actually had its own unit of measurement before it switched over to the metric system as well. In fact, a lot of countries did.
Well, that was the problem. Everybody had their own, and you had to convert.
What's interesting is why they use Celsius and not switch over to Kelvin for temperature.
Why would they switch to Kelvin?
Why not?
Well, everybody's using Celsius, and that's metric. Why do you want to switch to Kelvin?
Well, because if you're going to use everything, well, it's one of the big arguments, other than like everyone is using it, and you know it's all divisible by 10 for weights and stuff.
Yeah,
is that. It's something that the scientific community uses.
You know, yeah, but it's good for science. It's not. I mean, zero is freezing, 100 is boiling. How better can you get?
Boiling,
that's Celsius.
Well, yeah, but that's
so easy.
100 boiling. You know, depending on that's you know sea level. Or are you talking, you know, 5 miles up?
Yeah, well, but I mean, essentially, you're going to have that problem for any system, no matter what it is. But when you say zero freezing,
well,
100 boiling,
but that's gets just
it.
that's a cultural thing. That's what you assume. If you
well, that's, it's no different than 10 centimeters equals a decimeter. You know, and 10 decimeters equals a meter. It just makes it easy to make it zero freezing, 100 boiling, because it's base 10.
Well, I'm just saying that if you were raised in a system that was not the metric system and you were used to, okay, you know,
well, that's what the U.S. is. You're raised
exactly.
in a system that isn't.
So
everybody else switched.
Some people regretting it.
If you'd like to hear more of this argument, visit ArguCon.
I say until something blows up and humanity hangs on a very thin thread between total extinction and barely living, that's when we should switch. Next.
We really need to save this for ArguCon, because I don't think we have enough time for me to respond to that. SoCal Jess says, can anyone out there recreate a baseball game using only a game's stats in a manner so that a caveman can understand?
Wait a minute. I think cavemen have proved time and time again on the Geico commercials that they are not the lowbrow, grunting cave dwellers that their name implies.
Law of Bob says, Bangi, are you serious? What about France versus Ireland or Ireland versus Argentina? Nice to hear you guys talk about rugby. As a South African living in New Zealand, it's quite interesting to hear a couple of Americans try and decipher this game. I was, however, a little more confused when Robert asked about Arl.
Robert? Who's Robert?
Robert Heron? Oh, maybe he means Roger and about AFL.
Uh-huh.
There's an organization called Australian Rugby League, which is very different from Aussie rules. Rugby League is a game somewhere between union and NFL. Just wiki it. Yeah, I know about Rugby League. Don't watch it. I know a lot of people poo-poo it, saying Rugby Union
poo-poo.
Is much better than Rugby League, and that Rugby League is a bastardization. So I haven't bothered to follow it because of
have
that.
Have you ever followed the...
I do follow the Sevens, though.
Do you ever follow Australian baseball?
I kind of lightly do, yeah. I mean, I read about
so
it from
no.
time to time. But, I mean, I don't follow. What do you mean by follow? Like,
do I watch
the games? No, they're not broadcast here. I don't. It's hard to even get the standings. But I know.
You can get them online.
It. Yeah, it's pretty tough, though.
In other words, you don't want to spend the effort. That's fine. Next comment.
No, that's not true.
It's all right.
It's not true. It's much more difficult to get a hold of than Japanese or Mexican or the Caribbean series or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Bangi says, do you really see France, Ireland, or Argentina taking the title?
The Argies.
England and South Africa are serious contenders. I don't know if England is anymore after the way they've played. Played badly against the United States and then got shut out by South Africa. They are in trouble. Argentina's looking good. Argentina could take the title.
Could.
I don't think they will.
But might they come pretty close?
They could, yeah. I don't think France or Ireland can, from what I've seen. Again, what do I know?
Yes, exactly. I often say that.
I know.
But I sit next to you.
A Law of Bob says, not taking the title, yes, but imagine France comes second in the Group D. Second in Group D will not play the All Blacks. I'd put $10 on the All Blacks winning, but my house? Hell no. By the way, working as a Springbok fan in a New Zealand supermarket after that loss? Heaven. The whole place sunk into a depression like everyone had lost their mother. You're an evil man, Law of Bob.
Wait, was he the same one that was commenting on us commenting on rugby?
Or
is this? Oh, I was just going to say. This.
No, he likes us commenting on rugby.
Okay, I was just wondering if this is another rugby
same,
South African.
Same guy, Law of Bob.
All right.
Craig By says, "Hi guys.
Hello.
Just found this podcast and it's great. And as a Kiwi, finding it when it's discussing the Rugby World Cup is brilliant. I've definitely subscribed to the podcast. Really looking forward to having this podcast as a regular listen." Thank you, Craig B. Good to have you. Bangai. Is it Bangi or Bangai?
How do you spell it?
B-A-N-G-Y. With a capital G.
B-A-N-G-Y? B-A-N-G-Y? What does he say?
He says, "It must have felt the same way as I did when I heard Schalke Burger was suspended." He's saying that to Law of Bob. And then Law of Bob says, "That suspension has just been reduced to 2 weeks. He'll be back." And then I think this is probably after England got shut out. Bangi says, "Northern Hemisphere rugby looks like it's gone backwards."
Backwards?
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, because New Zealand, South Africa, and Australia are all just tearing it up. Finally, Stacy says, "Hi, Roger and Tom. First time poster, very short time listener. I'm not sure if Tom can help me out or one of the other listeners can, but I'm missing some episodes, numbers 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, 9, 11, 15, 16, and 18. I have even checked archive.org, but apart from that excellent netcast, it is my favorite twit, used to be, but I have to listen to all I can so far, and I have never laughed so much before. You and Roger work great together." That's the problem with not putting in periods, because somebody like me who's tired just makes a mincemeat out of your posting. Apologize for that. And Roger, what has happened to the What's New Now podcast? Is it coming back?
That was actually Jim Lauterbach's thing. And when he left, that went with him.
So not coming back.
Not for the foreseeable future. And okay. The thing is, we didn't get the resources that we planned on getting, so we're kind of shorthanded. So what we're doing right now is pretty much all we can handle.
As for finding the old episodes, if you go to subbrilliant.com/blog, look in the category section and click on East Meets West, all the episodes going, I don't know, let's see, actually, I can look here. All the episodes up to a certain point were on subbrilliant.com/blog, I think up to episode 19, possibly. So up to episode 20, actually, we're on subbrilliant.com/blog. So if you go to subbrilliant.com/blog, click on the East Meets West category, you'll find the first 20 episodes described and links directly to those MP3s.
Cool.
1 through 20, however, are not in the feed anymore because we switched to the East Meets West blog itself.
Yeah.
That's why they're not in the feed.
And if any of you get a chance, watch D-Wars, better watch it as a matinee and go with it. It's going to be so bad, it's good.
Okay. Good advice.
Yes.
Thanks for listening, folks. We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Place your comments at brilliant.com/EMW.
Bye.